HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
Thank you so much for listening to my show, Kindred Spirits, today. I have a wonderful new author on the show named Alea Deo, and she has written a book called Cups of Consciousness, and I am so thrilled to have this incredible show with you, to be able to bring to you the words of the thinkers, the consciousness world of today. So many people that are never heard until they are interviewed or until you by chance run across their books. So I hope you will listen to us, Kindred Spirits, the fourth Tuesday of every month at 9 o'clock in the morning, Pacific Standard Time. Without further ado, I would like to introduce Alea. Alea, good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Lynn.
And you have written a wonderful book that I want to talk about. And can you tell us a little bit about how you came to write your book about Seven Cups of Consciousness?
My whole life I've been immersed in spirituality, and actually as a teenager I started with your book, Lynn. That was my very beginning introduction to spirituality. And then from that got even more intrigued and continued my education and went on and got my massage degree and then became a Reiki practitioner and then a Reiki master and then went on and got my master's in Oriental medicine. And after 10 years of being in private practice as an alternative healthcare practitioner, I had what is called an enlightenment experience, or an enlightenment moment, where my awareness of the other realms came online. It was like getting energetic x-ray glasses and being able to perceive the angelic realm, feel people's feelings to a greater degree, understand why they had created the challenges that they had and what it was their soul was really determined to master. And so after that 2001 enlightenment experience, I was really forced to come up with seven concepts or a way of being to navigate this highly sensitive, aware reality with grace and ease. So these seven concepts that I talk about are literally tools that I've used for my own life and for my clients and subscribers to help them navigate life with a higher level of consciousness, awareness, and empowerment.
Alea, when you're talking about higher levels of consciousness, can you describe that just a little bit? I think a lot of people listening to the show might wonder what you mean. Different people mean different things with the words higher consciousness.
Yeah, I think of it as perceiving realms that are non-physical. So when we close our eyes and we bring our awareness inside, or we tap into the dream world, we're actually going into another dimension reality, perceiving a different plane. When we fantasize, when we dream, when we ponder, we're actually taking our awareness out of the physical plane and into these other realms that do exist. And the very first concept that I talk about is that we live in a multi-dimensional reality. And so when we start to tap... Go ahead. What was that, Lynn?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I really would love it if you would describe multidimensional reality.
Yes. So imagine that the physical realm is the first floor of a building, like the lobby.
Uh-huh.
And then we have all of these other floors that we actually do have the ability to tap into using what I call the energy self or the imagination, and other beings, guides, angels, exist on these higher floors in the building.
So you are explaining to people in this book how to get to those other levels?
Yes, how to take your crystal glass elevator up to higher floors in a really safe, controlled way and tap into energetic resources that we wouldn't normally have access to if we were just thinking that our experience is just one floor, physical dimension, that's all that exists.
It's interesting, isn't it, how we all describe that so differently. In shamanism,
yes,
we have first intention, which is, you know, your everyday life, what you're talking about, ground floor. And second intention is, you know, up into the astral world, into more, certainly a different level of consciousness. And third intention is really into the etheric realms for
yeah.
a shamanic student. And for you... that's a different, you know, it's really interesting to me how that shifts from person to person and teacher to teacher. And you mentioned something that is very interesting to me. You say, ride right in your body. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Absolutely. I really think of the body actually as a nature spirit. And I did a bit of research after I had this insight with the Shintoism in Japan and then shamanism and this whole experience of the body being very connected to the nature kingdom, and that we are souls having an experience in the human body, but we are not the body. And a lot of the times we over-identify ourselves thinking that we are the body. It's almost like thinking you're the horse that you ride or the car that you drive. But when we souls begin to awaken to our own unique vibration, then we're actually able to connect more deeply with this nature spirit that we are literally riding in, and it then begins to go through a process of awakening. And I think of the shaman as having a fully awakened body deva, being able to literally morph into other nature spirits, which is an aspect of itself.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think what happens, however, is that people ask me all the time, well, you talk about these wonderful things, how do you get there? Can you describe a couple of ways that when you're working with someone, and let's just say someone who has never heard of this kind of work, how would you begin with them?
It depends on the age and the focal point of somebody. So if I'm working with someone who's visual or tactile, it just depends on that sensitivity. But in general, I would say, imagine you're riding a horse. What kind of personality does your horse have? How would you treat your horse? How would you talk to your horse? Are you going to micromanage your horse? Are you going to hold a loving space for your horse to figure out how to meet its own needs? And so I might have somebody literally imagine that they are on a saddle, leaning down and whispering in their horse's ear and recognizing that horse consciousness. Now, the horse is the body deva nature spirit. This physical human form is a bit more evolved than a horse. It's incredibly complex and has a very powerful energy. And so when we start to simply recognize this nature spirit that we are literally in, it starts to awaken and we can start to feel this other energy around us that is different than the soul that we're riding. If somebody has a deeper level of connection with the angelic presence, I would first help them identify what it is for them when they're not in the human form. Some part of them has a memory of when you're an angel with wings on the other side, what is your personality? What's your identity? What do you feel like up there? And then that helps give people the distinction and discernment between themselves and their body.
I think that's true. I think then someone might say, well, that's a lot of work with the imagination. What would you say to that?
Yeah, that's the very first step. We use the imagination, but then there's a deeper teaching that I share in the book and in my sessions where I'm really employing their energy self, which I call the higher self. And the body also has an energy self, which I call the body deva's higher self. And so whenever we're making a request, we use the mind just to point us in the right direction. Then we ask the higher self, the body deva's higher self, to recognize their own unique consciousness. So your higher self would recognize your soul consciousness. Your body deva would recognize its consciousness. And then as I'm inviting somebody to do that in a higher realm, then we have to take the third step, which is a deep breath in. You totally let go. You relax and you allow some other vibrational part of you to come into play. And then we start to feel this shift that's happening on this higher floor rippling down into the physical dimension.
Well, I think
so. It becomes a palpable experience.
Yeah, I think it does. And I think I've always taught that what you imagine is real.
Yes.
You know, when you first, this is absolutely crazy today. I have your questions all set up on my computer, and the computer keeps dying on me, so I have to reboot it. It's just insane. Plus the fact, I'm sorry about that introduction.
We'll go off script.
Yeah, I could definitely go off script. It's just that I've been thinking about getting this thing to work properly. But it's very interesting to me the way you describe it, the cups of consciousness. And you are never alone, you say, in one parts of your book. Can you talk about that a minute? A lot of people are afraid of being alone, I think.
Yes, And it's interesting, as I've been getting feedback from people reading the book for the first time, people are saying, oh, my God, I felt so alone, but then when I read Chapter 2 and realized that I have a team and guides and angels around me, now I feel like I have no privacy. And so it's about, you know, cultivating appropriate boundaries. But this other concept, the second concept, kind of spins from the first one. The first one is you live in a multidimensional world. But then the second one talks about that there are beings of love and light in these other realms, dimensions, floors, and they can help you. They are around you all the time, whether you perceive it or not. And so when we learn how to make a request to our guides, our angels, and our teams to hold very particular qualities and vibrations inside themselves, we then start feeling a much deeper level of support.
You say when you learn how to make a request. Can you explain that, sweetie?
Yeah, in technology, we would have to get online, onto the internet, in order to send an email. When I think of communicating or connecting or making requests into these other dimensions, we actually have to pull ourselves into our energy self. It's that non-physical part of us. And so we take a deep breath in and we pull ourselves into this inner river of light. And then as we're holding our awareness, imagination, intent, using the higher self to pull ourselves in, then we make the request for our higher self to connect with our guides, our team, to receive information in this other realm with our energy self. And then as we receive it energetically, then we start to feel it somehow, either through our energetic eyes, our ears, our kinesthetic sense, and then we understand a deeper concept or we get the message however we perceive it. Everybody gets their messages differently. It might be a flash of light and then just a deep understanding. So it's really using the higher self to receive the information, and then we stay more in power. We don't give our power to our guides or archangels or ascended masters. We hold it in our own.
You talk about protocols and reference points. Is that kind of what you're talking about?
It's the protocol is actually more of the process to fully embody the concepts. Mm-hmm. And I think of a protocol like a prayer. And as I was evolving and coming up with these formulas that would affect change in my life and in the life of others, I had like an energy download or meditation or guidance that there were 7 steps to a prayer and or a protocol. And so when we go through these 7 steps of a prayer protocol and we get our body, our soul essence energy, and our team that surrounds us to hold very particular vibrations, then manifestation becomes evident. So it's literally an exercise to energetically embody what it is we're yearning for.
Okay. In other words, seeing it as materialized, that sort of thing?
Yeah. So if I am in a place of fear, my soul is really working on mastering trust and empowerment. Or if I'm the victim, my soul is really determined to master empowerment. And so instead of using victim situations or scenarios, I invite the vibrational higher self aspect of me, my body, and team to all activate the vibration of empowerment in our divine minds and in the higher realms. So that essentially is a protocol prayer request for the energy to shift in the higher realms, which then reflects into the physical plane. And in one of my meditations and also my work with myself and others, I got a very clear insight that our position in the physical plane enables us to make requests for the energy to shift in the higher realms. As it shifts up there, it then reflects down here. And so really using that position appropriately.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. I talk a lot about and work a lot with luminous fibers, and you talk about something, the divine line, I think.
Yes.
Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah. What is it? Well, do you mind if I ask what your definition of luminous fibers is?
Gosh, say it again. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. What is your definition of luminous fibers? Because I've never heard that before, and I'm intrigued.
Well, luminous fibers are the matrix of energy lines that compose our physical existence, that part of our existence that is manifested into the physical. So there are energy lines around every living thing and around all things on Earth. And these luminous fibers attach to the matrix of the universe. So let's just say you're thinking about something really positive, that thought will go out on the luminous fibers over to the Middle East, and it may help with the war. We don't think that we are responsible for things that are out of our everyday consciousness. Let's just say the war in Libya, which is so horrific. We don't think we're at all responsible for that, but somehow we are, in the sense that we are responsible for the world that we live in. We're responsible for our environment and for all of the issues that are teaching us, and we bring them into being somehow. So when you think of something negative, it goes to other parts of the world. If you think something positive, it also goes everywhere. And so if there is a war in the world on the other side of the planet, somehow there is a war inside of us.
Mm-hmm. We're empathically feeling it, too.
Well, I think so. And those luminous fibers move out into the whole universe, and you can ride, you can move on those luminous fibers once you see them. And when you're talking about your divine line, right? Isn't that how you describe it?
Yes, it's the river of light that flows, that I perceive flowing on the front of the spine. It's actually where the soul rides in the body.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, which is a little different than a lot of ancient teachings.
That's interesting because it's the same kind of thing that I'm talking about. You're riding right in your body. And you're looking for the divine line. In other words, for a shaman, you'd be looking for the luminous fibers. You'd be looking, let's just take, for example, the Sisterhood of the Shields, which is, you know, the extraordinary women of consciousness that I'm a part of. There are 44 of us. And we move into other levels of consciousness. We also go at night, we fly into other parts of the world that are damaged, and we smooth the luminous fibers as much as we can on the etheric field. And why do you do that? You do that because it helps to bring peace instead of chaos.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
I was kind of wondering when you say, you know, finding your divine line, is that what you're talking about?
It is that part of us that is connected to the whole, where we are one with everything. And when we cultivate very particular vibrations in that divine line, we then end up having that impact in the luminous fiber experience.
Yeah, okay. Hold that thought for station identification. We'll be right back.
Environmentally sound for your mind. HRNradio.com.
We are speaking with a wonderful teacher and healer named Alea Dow. How do you pronounce your last name?
You got it right, Alea Dow.
Dow. Well, that's an interesting last name.
It is.
It's spelled D-A-O. And
yes.
She is an author, a sound healer, an energetic practitioner, a minister in the state of California, a doctor of oriental medicine in New Mexico, and a licensed acupuncturist in Colorado. So she has done her homework, is what I would call that. A lot of people want to do things in the world, and they go to a couple of seminars, and they think that they can go out and be a shaman or a healer and take on that responsibility without oftentimes knowing anything about the manifestations of what it takes to be a healer or a shaman. What do you feel about that, Alea?
Absolutely correct. It's a very intense journey, and I'm glad that I had all the training that I did and that I actually started off at a very young age. And I actually had experience of what it was like to be a healer with no training. When I was in boarding school, people just sort of naturally gravitated towards me, and they would tell me their stories, and they'd say, Leia, touch my shoulder, or work on my ankle, or what do you think I should do about this situation? And I was grappling to find my inner wisdom to guide appropriately and create a safe space, but felt really like I didn't have appropriate training. And so when I went to Lewis and Clark, the same thing started happening again. People would just sort of come to me and treated me essentially like this healer, even though I didn't have that sign on my back that I knew of. And then my college year, my senior year, actually my junior year in college, if people are coming to me for me to help them, I need to figure out how to help them in a more empowered, powerful, gentle, graceful, educated way. And so that, at the age of 20, I started my whole education in the process. And I think it's a continual education. It never stops. And I think now my greatest challenge that I fully embrace and love is how to stay alive and vibrant as a healer, balanced, not taking on the impact, sensitivity, or responsibilities that are not mine, and holding a really empowered place for the people that I work with. And so it just continues to be an education and never ending, constantly reinventing oneself as a healer, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic, and I think I certainly feel that way. And
yeah.
In the perfect world, what do you hope your readers will walk away with after reading your book?
The Seven Cups of Consciousness are really a roadmap, a template for how to make the changes that you are really wanting internally and externally. So I would hope that people would walk away with a sense of empowerment and clarity, not feeling like a victim, having a greater sense of control over their internal world, which then positively impacts their outer world. A lot of the times we put our energy in areas and on things where it's not very effective, and then we don't get the desired outcome. So it's the highest level of efficiency, a roadmap, a template for creating the life that you intend.
Well, and so that includes what you were saying about how to use your energy field.
Yes, and how to use your inner environment. So I speak a lot about that divine mind, pulling yourself into this inner river of light where you are connected to love, oneness, your essence, that part of you that is so perfect and whole. And actually the seventh concept talks about the idea that you are perfect and there is a river of light flowing within you. And when we start to connect with that part of ourselves, we're then able to move, interact, engage, and react from that authentic essence place that does reside within.
Well, I think it's a beautiful way of explaining it. I like that a lot. And when you do your meditations, you said that in your book, it includes links for 11 downloadable audio meditations. How do you use those? Tell me and tell my audience a little bit about that, if you will.
Each cup is a concept, and I have audio meditations that actually help you energetically experience the concept in a deeper way. And from my perspective, when we let our energy self, our higher self, get the information, then our mind understands it in a much deeper, faster way than if we try to absorb it just with the mind. So we're really, the audio meditations gives people a more kinesthetic experience of what I'm speaking about. And there are very, you know, the book is sort of an introduction to these seven concepts, and then the audio meditations is a deeper experience. And in 2009, I started recording daily cups of consciousness that basically spin these seven concepts into each one of the meditations. And I think I have 1,200 meditations online. So in the book,
gracious,
it gives you access to 12 of them.
Yeah. And are these like guided meditations?
They are. They're speaking to your higher self, your body, David's higher self, your team, your guides. And an 8-year-old one time said to me, "Alea, I listen to your meditations, but I need to tell you something." And I was like, "What?" And he goes, "I don't listen. I just let myself feel it, and it works much better that way." And so the wisdom of the, you know, from the mouth of babes, where if you're really
yeah,
letting this other part of you receive the work, and that's hard for us to understand in our culture because we so often navigate our life from our mind. And this work is all about letting your wiser, higher, emotional part of you receive, shift, transform, and then the mind gets it.
Yeah, I understand that it's so true. And you tell us about your journey as a sound healer.
When I had that enlightenment experience, after that shift, I actually started hearing what I call the angelic choir singing to me almost 24/7. And after about 2 or 3 years of this beautiful angelic choir singing to me, my guide started saying to me, "Alea, you're going to start singing to other people." And I was like, "There's no way I'm going to be making weird spinning sounds." And I remember one day in session with a client of mine, and he had shoulder pain, and I think I'd given him 4 or 5 acupuncture sessions to help with the shoulder pain, and nothing was shifting it. And then I started hearing a sound coming from his shoulder that was less than beautiful. And I said to him, you know, would you mind if I tried something I've never tried before, and let's just see if it works? And he goes, yeah, sure, whatever it takes. I'm in so much pain, and I just got to shift it. And so I started making this discordant, unbalanced sound, and slowly brought that sound within and around the shoulder into a harmonic, beautiful tone. And literally within 30 seconds of me toning, he started to move his shoulder, and he goes, oh, the pain is gone. And I was like, really? So that was my first experience using sound to shift the energy in the physical realm.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. You are a sound healer, and I know that many of my constituents would want to know what you mean by that.
I think of everyone as a sound healer. We all use music, humming, or even our words to shift the way that we're feeling or express the way that we're feeling. So when we start to use sound in a conscious way, it becomes even more effective, efficient, and powerful.
What kinds of, do you use instruments for sound?
I actually use my voice and sometimes crystal bowls and tuning forks, but usually just my voice.
Just your voice?
Yeah, maybe I can give you a snippet in a moment.
We'll be back after station identification.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Alea, you were talking about sound healing when we left for station identification. And I also noticed that in the book that you talk about working with your team, your body diva, and higher self in your book. Those are three terms that, again, mean something different to everybody. Can you talk about that for a minute, if you will?
Yeah. The body diva is the nature spirit that we're riding in, and the team is actually a little bit different than our guides. So these are beings that exist in another dimension, another realm, and as children, we may have remembered having imaginary friends. And so when we start connecting with our team in a more conscious way, recognizing that they are at a similar level of evolution as we are, and we invite them to begin holding the vibrations that they really value, and then they have the capacity to actually buffer us and support us and create what I call a dimensional, empathic, positive experience, where we are being positively, empathically impacted by a being in another dimension. And also, when we connect with our teams, the loneliness goes away. We start feeling greater degrees of support. And sometimes people get confused with teams and thinking that teams are fragments of us. But I actually see them as individual souls. And I actually had an insight, Lynn, and I wonder if it was a higher dimensional conversation that you and I were having. But last week, I had an epiphany that the body, deva, nature, spirit, physical human form, also has a team. But the team is made up of animal spirits. So it was really profound, and so then I started inviting my body diva and some of my clients to have their body divas connect in with the appropriate animal totems, nature spirits, that could create a greater protection for our physical human form.
Yeah, and it's very interesting about the animal when we talk about the power animals. We're talking about finding our original, authentic selves, our authentic nature that perhaps has been so disturbed by our social circumstances and our families. And so I work with that a great deal. And certainly our team, as you put it, I don't know. Explain what you mean by your team.
Well, your team are those beings that do exist in another dimension, almost like on a higher floor. And they're with us from birth. And I think of the soul that rides in the body as having this team of beings that can also act as guides, can give us information. And a few years back, I decided to get my pilot's license. And on one of the days of going up and trying to figure out how to fly this contraption and land it, I was sort of at my wit's end because I just couldn't figure out how to land the plane, and that's a pretty key essential piece to flying a plane. And at the end of the day, I said, team, go and master flight in some other dimension and come back tomorrow morning with total mastery of landing the plane. And so when I showed up at the flight school the next day, I felt my team around me, and I felt this incredible confidence and deep inner knowing inside them. So I was being positively impacted by the wisdom that they had cultivated inside themselves. And then I could literally feel what I was supposed to do in order to land the plane. And after five perfect landings, my instructor looked at me kind of blown away, and she's like, what happened to you? And I couldn't exactly tell her, well, I sent my angelic team to go master landings and takeoffs. But when we use our team as that resource and hold very particular qualities, vibrations, and mastery inside themselves, we then have a deeper understanding of how to do it because we can literally feel it with our energy fields.
Well, you do, and just as long as the team doesn't go on vacation when you're trying to land your plane.
Exactly.
we
have chats about that.
Yeah, and you also speak about complications in your life, being great teachers, I think. That's what you're saying. And a lot of people I know today feel like the rug has been pulled out from under them, that financially they're in tremendous stress. How would you approach that kind of issue with somebody?
I would start with taking the awareness and the what I call reference points. It's like where we go for support. We would take it off of money. We'd take it off the job, the house, the home. And we would actually hold our awareness, and we would look for support internally in that inner river of light divine line. And then from my perspective, the body also has a divine line and is a master at manifesting. But sometimes the soul riding in the body thinks that it should be able to figure out how to manifest in the physical realm. But again, from my experience, we're not physical beings. We're etheric beings having a human experience. It's almost an empathic physical experience. And so when we start as souls connecting with the light that flows within us as our primary support, we increase that flow of light internally. So think about how much we want to be supported in our finances. Then you would actually hold that level of support, maybe even more, internally in the divine line river of light. Then you'd invite your body to do the same, to feel that support in its divine line that runs through the spine. Then you get your team to hold that support in their divine lines, to be fully supported by the light that flows within them. And then when we get that sacred trinity, you, your body, and team, all holding that level of inner support, then we start to reflect different situations for ourselves in our outer world. And when I first started using these seven concepts, I was definitely financially hard up. It was frightening. I almost lost my house to foreclosure. And so I started practicing these inner techniques and then was pulsed appropriately in the physical dimension, and different situations started to appear in my physical realm that was literally the reflection of cultivating this greater degree of inner support.
Alea, can you make it very simple, like step one, two, three, for someone who's having financial trouble?
So step one, close your eyes. Closing your eyes takes your awareness off the physical realm and into your inner realm.
Say that again.
Huh?
I couldn't quite understand you. Say it again.
Oh, sure. Step one is closing your eyes, taking your awareness off of the physical dimension, and bringing your awareness into your inner realm. Step two is taking a deep breath in and pulling yourself into this inner river of light like your life depends on it. Think of it as your oxygen line. And you have this inner column of light flowing up and down the front of your spine in your body. It goes out the top of your head, out your base chakra. And so as you use your inhale to pull yourself into this inner river, then you use your imagination just for a moment to perceive a beautiful, exquisite light that is flowing in this inner column. And the next step is to invite your higher self, your body to its higher self and team, to activate the vibration of support in your divine lines. And then we take a deep breath, we let go, we relax, we allow some other vibrational part of us to be doing the work in a higher realm, activating vibration support in that higher plane, internally and around us in that higher realm. And then we wait for that ripple. And then we hold the awareness that what we are most supported by is the light that flows within us.
So what you're speaking of is like a kundalini energy. Is that right?
The kundalini energy would be the body, divine nature, spirit being supported by the light that flows in its divine line.
Correct.
So when I think of the kundalini, it's the body's experience of its own creative current.
Huh. That's
it's a little different.
You see that as difference? As difference? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think the body has, you know, the kundalini energy, and then our soul has a different energy that's not kundalini.
Mm-hmm.
So now, it could be that the divine line of the soul and the divine line of the body create that kundalini flow. That's a possibility. I haven't really thought about that in that framework, but getting a little download right now, Lynn. Thank you.
Well, you're meditating, and you're visualizing this inner river of light going up your spine, out through the top of your head, and then do you have it circle around back to the root chakra and back up again?
Yes, there is actually a divine cosmic loop that I perceive that goes out the top of our head up to the heart of source, where we have a divine spark, and then it loops back around, and it comes all the way through the planet of Earth, the heart of Earth, coming up to the base chakra. So the soul has a divine loop, the body has a divine loop, and the body's loop is connected with the Earth loop. And I call that the divine cosmic loop.
Well, that's interesting. I think it's very important for your readers to experience that. And I think it's very intelligent of you to include downloadable audio meditations. I think that's quite terrific.
And the book also has, there's the link to get online, and it has images of all of the terms that I talk about, as well as an empathic deck and stories and a YouTube about these concepts that I speak about. So I really wanted to create a greater support for people as they learn about these different concepts that might change the paradigm a little bit for them.
Well, I think it would change their paradigm for the way that they think, for the way that they... the way that people picture reality and confirm reality. I think it's all interesting. It's kind of like embracing your soul's gifts as you talk about it. Is that true?
Yes, definitely.
And you also talk about, we have station identification. I shall return in one moment.
Timeless information for your self-care and health. HRNradio.com.
Leah, you were speaking to me about a global consciousness.
Yeah, that global impact that you were talking about earlier and how to work those energies. And I had an insight a few years ago of really wanting to serve in a much bigger, deeper way and have a positive impact in the world. And so I went into meditation and asked, how can I hold my energy in a way that will positively, empathically impact others? And I was shown that the moment I have attachment, desire for another person's reality, and then I unconsciously, energetically would take responsibility for that outer situation, then unconsciously, energetically, I'd put my gifts, we were talking about the spiritual gifts, wisdom and mastery, I place that externally on another or an outer circumstance. And then I end up dropping my energy fields of coherence from 100% to zero. And then I was shown how to actually impact in a much more powerful way by holding 100% attachment and desire, which is, I think is what you were talking about earlier, of when you're going and smoothing the grid, you're holding a very particular energy inside yourself and positively impacting what I would call the grids of the planet or different regions. Mm-hmm. And so as we hold that attachment and desire deep inside our divine line, where I'm only attached and desiring for a vibration of peace or love, then I'm only responsible for that vibration deep inside, then that creates this positive impact field and could potentially impact everyone on the planet, or 10,000 people, or 100,000 people. And so often I find that people that do want to do global work or have positive impacts in the world, they get really tired and burned out, and I didn't want that to happen to me. And so I've started practicing thinking about what I do want for the world, for a particular region, and then holding that side in the inner river. Same for the body, Dave, and the team, and then we start feeling that impact into the global system and the consciousness.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people say, well, how do I know that it's doing anything?
Yeah, well, do we need to know? Because then the ego gets involved. Or do we just hold it deep inside and we know, and that's all, when we hold that vibration, we're in a greater degree of peace and then we're modeling that energy in the world. And so we may not see the impact in our day-to-day life, but I think that we'll start to feel it over the long term. And from my experience, when we have a bigger impact, we actually might see it less. And so to not be attached to the proving of it.
Well, that's
what's
true.
Your spin on that?
Well, I think that I have a little bit of a different idea. When we talk, or people, certainly the Eastern religions, talk about desire. They talk about attachment. They talk about attachment is one thing. Desire is really quite different in my way of thinking. I think that we come here into this earthwalk to learn about many things, and you talk about this, and I haven't given you a chance really to explain it, but when you have conflicts in your life and so forth, they teach you great things if you see it as an opportunity to learn. And I really think that desire is a good thing in a way. I mean, what you desire, let's just say, you know, things that people think that you shouldn't do, like they abstain from any kind of sensuality. I think that's kind of tragic in a way, because I think sensuality teaches you many, many things. This particular earthwalk is a relative world, and in this relative world, you can feel, you can have sex, you can touch someone or something, and it's an incredible gift, I think, from the prime movers of the universe to allow us to have these incredible feelings in the relative world. And to say that, oh, gee, I'm not going to work in this relative world. I'm not going to have desires. I'm going to meditate away from desires. I think it's a shame, because I think you miss what you've come here to learn in a relative world. And what do you think about that, Alea?
I actually totally agree, and I actually think that desire opens up our receptors for receiving.
I do too.
And that part of the experience of being here is to learn how to receive light, love, connection even more deeply. And so we can literally use our desire to open to receive more deeply and be in a greater state of oneness, connection, and love.
I think that's true. And I think that eliminating desire is an odd thing. I think a thinker, a Buddha, would say, well, you know, desiring things and you can't manifest them in a very poor environment, say, for example, would cause you great discomfort. Well, depends on what you do with your life and what responsibility you take. And
absolutely.
You know, and you were talking about issues, problems, things that come up that are learning points. Do you want to talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, there's actually a piece that you spoke about that triggered another thought with attachment. And when we hold, from my perspective, when we hold our attachment on like a higher realm for experiencing a particular reality or outcome that we are desiring, I have found that that attachment and then the receiving in that energetic realm triggers the reflection and the manifestation in the physical realm. So it's actually holding the attachment appropriately.
Well, that's interesting. And appropriately means what?
In the dimension where it's most potent and effective and actually creates the manifestation in the physical realm. But sometimes when we hold attachment in the physical realm, then we get frustrated and impatient, and then suffering kicks in. And so to actually be attached to it on a higher floor, feel it there, receive it there, get it there, be totally fulfilled in that realm, and then it starts to ripple into this one, and it accelerates the manifestation phenomenon.
Yes. I like the way you explain that. It's wonderful. And it ripples into manifestation. I like that.
Yeah.
is there anything else? We have just a short time now. Anything else you'd like to discuss, talk about, tell our listeners?
I just am in deep gratitude. And hold on one second. I'm in deep gratitude for being on your show. And I think that I would love to gift your listeners with a cup of Daily Cups of Consciousness. They can go to cupsofconsciousness.com to check it out. And if people are intrigued by the book, you can go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and get the 7 Cups of Consciousness.
I think that's wonderful. And to reach you, your website is what?
AleyaDao.com, AleyaDao.com.
That's great. Is that your maiden name?
It Dao? Isn't. I actually changed my name after that enlightenment experience.
Aha. Uh-huh. Yeah, because it's very interesting. In my book, the book that in Japan I was working with Shikai, Woman of the Sacred Garden, and I talk a lot about Taoism in that book, and which is spelled T-A-O.
Right.
And so is that what you were thinking of when you changed your name?
Yes, my middle name was illegally D-O-W. And then after that enlightenment experience, I changed it to D-A-O.
Very interesting, isn't it? D-O-W. Is that like the stock market?
Yeah, which is another reason why I changed
for today. Well, it's consciousness having to do with abundance, right?
Absolutely. And if I think, I'm not a religious person, but if I think about what I am most aligned with, it is that Taoism and how to live life from a more balanced perspective and a more empowered state and accessing higher states of consciousness in every breath.
Yes, that's wonderful. You're quite wonderful, Aleya. And we have no more time, I guess, for this show. It seems like we just began. And we've been talking with Aleya Dao, and she is an author, a sound healer, energetic practitioner, and so much more. Go to her website or go to cupsofconsciousness.com, and you will surely have an extraordinary education with this woman. And thank you, Aleya, so much. Aleya, forgive me.
Thank you for being on this
show today. And it's really been great fun. And
it's
I hope I talk to you very soon.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And my wonderful listeners, thank you for joining us. And our next show will be 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, the fourth Tuesday of every month. And I send you blessings and so much love. And may there be soft winds in your life. And until next time, explore your dreams and embrace that distant shore. Namaste, everyone.